Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Yo. Look. Yo. Look. Aubrey Edwards, Tony Schiavone, we bout to party, we bout to party. Unrestricted, got the house now. We gon' turn it up, up, bring the house down. Got that bass, bass pumping, make them bounce now. Flossing like they bossing, and the freaks are coming out now.
Welcome to AEW Unrestricted, official podcast of All Elite Wrestling. I'm here, Aubrey Edwards. Also here is my close personal longtime friend, Tony Schiavone. What are you doing, Tony? How are you doing?
What a duo we have become. And a big shout out to you, everybody that's been working on our video games. AEW Casino Game is still available out there to download for you at Google Play or the App Store.
Hell yeah. Download it, play it, spend your money.
Spend your money.
Spend your money, earn some money. It's all good. Super fun. Anyway, speaking of money, we got one guy here who's absolute money, and I absolutely love.
Mm-hmm. That was good. Good segue.
I know, right? He's waxed and vaxed, ready for hot boy summer.
That's right. I'm living. Big boy living, big hot living. I know Tony knows.
Yeah, we got Peter Avalon here. And for those of you watching the YouTube version, Peter is dressed in a robe, as you would come to imagine. I like to imagine he just rolled out of bed, ready to go.
I did. There's the bed behind me. It's made. And also, the red sheets match my robe, so you see a theme going on.
I like it. Very, very consistent.
Thank you.
All right, Peter Avalon, here's your accolades. We like to run them down at the beginning. If we missed anything, you could let us know.
Let's do it.
All right. 2015 PWI Top 500, ranked 464. Championship Wrestling from a Hollywood Heritage Heavyweight Champion.
The longest reigning of all time at 672 days. Nobody since then has been able to touch my record at Championship Wrestling from Hollywood. So just saying.
Boom.
Twice you were the tag team, Heritage Tag Team Champions with Ray Rosas.
Three times, actually. I busted three times. That is incorrect, but three times.
All right. We want to get it right. United Wrestling Network Television Champion. Insane Wrestling, which certainly fits you. Insane Wrestling League Anarchy Champion, Insane Wrestling League World Heavyweight Champion, SoCal Pro Wrestling Tag Team Champion, and West Coast Wrestling Connection Tag Team Champion as well. Anything else we miss?
I am the Wrestling Cares greatest tag team of all time in 2015. I have a ring that proves it with Ray Rosas. I was Norv Fernum in TNA.
Oh, we'll get to that. We'll get to that.
So, yeah, that's about it that I can think of right now.
So you're currently in the Wingmen, which is, as I've mentioned to like JD and Caesar this week, like my absolute favorite faction. I'm very much like my start was in comedy wrestling. So you guys having the characters and the dynamic that you do totally speaks to me.
Awesome.
And everything that I love about wrestling. So big fan of that. But prior to that, you were also the librarian. So you've had kind of a nice arc and character change during your time at AEW. But I do want to dive into the Wingmen a little bit. How did that faction come together? Because I know we had the walk-off and you lost as you did. We'll talk about that too. And then Caesar came out as sort of like your bodyguard. Nemeth got added at one point. JD, like how did this all come to be?
I think it's just an idea that when people see something next to each other, it just kind of works. I think the idea for the Wingmen was Christian's idea.
Really?
Yeah, I think he said to put the four of us together and Tony liked it. I was with Cesar already is a pretty picture. and then Nemeth and Drake were together. I had hurt myself. I have a hurt knee still. I'm still out with an injury. So that had taken me off TV for a little bit. I'm not sure when the decision was made to put us together. I just kind of got filled in. And then when I came back, I'm like, here I am, boys, let's play.
Such a dynamic, diverse crew, if I can use those terms. They really are. And
I love it.
The fact that JD comes out with you guys, it's just, and who's talked JD into that crazy looking top? I mean, it's like
the mesh one.
The mesh
one. That was Nemeth. He brought him a couple shirts and he's like, pick one. And that was the one he picked. So,
oh, wow.
It was good. JD's killing it. He's a fashionista and he's a wonderful man and he's a big hunk.
Okay. Very big hunk.
Yep.
Hey, talk about what being the elite, which BTE has been such a staple in wrestling for so many years. It's done so many things for people, obviously with the Bucks. What has it done for the wingmen, you think?
It just kind of gives us an opportunity to show our chops. It varies all over the place what we can do. I didn't know Cesar before we really were joined together doing this thing. And he's hilarious. He's very creative. He's a very, very intelligent, creative human. And I'm glad I'm able to learn about him with this. And we've been able to put together a lot of fun stuff. He's been helping me also with the Leva Bates stuff too. So I get to kind of show different acting. It's comedy, it's drama, it's all over the place. And it's been fun. So
it's interesting. Like, you know, so many of us backstage, like we're all friends, but I guess it makes sense. Like, I'm not a part of a faction. I don't know. I wouldn't consider the Ref Corps a faction, but, it's always interesting to see like all of the people that kind of spend a lot of time together and they all sort of become and grow as performers individually just because they're being built up by each other. So it's fascinating.
Absolutely. And then when you, I think there's just sometimes as performers, there's just some stuff you end up maybe you never kind of get to, or you just don't talk about because you just don't do it. And I have with my production background with the Hollywood show and everything, I ran a championship wrestling from Arizona for 2 years. I was having to put together television and talking, producing and everything like this. And when Cesar comes in and has ideas and we can start and figure out how to build them, it's like we start to realize that there's a lot of other stuff that we have in common that we probably would never have talked about just because now we're trying to film something.
Right. Someone came in with a Kama Sutra book and you're just like, yeah, let's do it, brother.
Yeah. How can we play with this? What can we do?
So you joined AEW originally as the librarian, which was announced on BTE. So when did you find out about the librarian gimmick and who pitched it to you?
It was at a wrestling show in LA. I want to say CD and the Bucks told me about it. Cody had slid into my DMs at one point to tell me to kind of reserve, I think, May of 2019. Didn't give me details. He just said, hey, kind of keep it available. And I said, sure. And then I kind of got details from the Bucks and everything. They told me about the librarian idea and what they wanted to do. And I was like, yeah, I'm in. I'm glad you came to me with something. They kind of put it as something silly that we think only you could get over. And they had very vague details. It was like, you work at a library and you shush people. So like, that's the gist of it. And we think you could get something like that over. It's like, yeah, absolutely.
How did the pairing with Leva Bates come about?
You know how brainstorming goes and wrestling goes and everything. It's just a discussion and everything changes as the day goes on. So I think the way they were going to introduce the librarian is like via a contest, like a fan contest that submit your video, a promo, librarian promo, whatever. And a bunch of people did it. Mm-hmm. What they were originally going to do was that I won it. I became the librarian and I won it. I didn't do a video. So it was going to be this whole thing. And I think they assumed that it would not get a positive reaction that way. So they're like, we have to kind of let someone become the librarian. And Leva Bates' video did so well that that's why she was considered. And then they put us together, which was great when the pairing, because like once they paired us up, like legitimately like a year prior was the first time I had ever met her and worked with her because I had wrestled her in Los Angeles in a tag match. And I thought she was great then. I thought she was a great person. And now, a year later, getting to be paired up with her and work with her, I was like, this is awesome. This is great.
I love the dynamic that you two had sitting ringside as well during the pandemic. And just everything that you guys have done from your sort of romance on BTE that's sort of reblossomed a little bit. Like, I personally didn't think the gimmick was really going to work. And I think you two absolutely made it work. And it was absolutely incredible.
There was not a lot really told to us about it. So it's like, we kind of make what you can do.
It's one of the great things we do. They let your creativity flow, don't they?
Yeah, absolutely.
Good stuff.
you made your AEW wrestling debut at Fight for the Fallen versus Sunny Kiss. Mm-hmm. When did you find out that you were wrestling in that show versus Sunny?
Good question. I don't remember when I found out. I know I was excited for it. And I remember that day, I was hype. I was nervous. I was like, this is great. This is ready. I'm ready. I'm so stoked. I don't remember exactly when I found out, though.
It's all just a blur.
Yeah, it's all a blur. And then it's just like watching it back and like the jib shots coming in, zooming in, and then watching me just strut out. I was like, this is the coolest thing ever.
Yeah, it's quite the memories back then, too, when we first started. And other than those camera shots, any other memories you pull away from that match, your first match?
Just all of it, everything. Just walking out, and I had no music. So that was a first thing for me. I've always had entrance music, and I've always had kind of entrance music I could kind of shake my ass to and kind of come out and shake. And Aubrey knows.
Oh, we'll get to that. We'll get to that.
Yeah. but now this was a new thing of like, I'm going to come out and it's just the silence. This also was before we had figured out to shush people like during the entrance. So I came out to just silence, and then the crowd saw me and Leva and they just booed the hell out of us. And when we got that reaction, I felt really, really good about myself. And then I thought the rest of the match went well. So I remember enjoying it. I remember coming to the back. I remember Tony being hyped. So hyped for me, man. So hyped for me in the match and everything. And it felt really good. It felt really good. He was so stoked. He stood up over the seat in the Tony Wayne. He yelled, he goes, "Hell yeah, Peter Avalon, championship wrestling from Hollywood. Hell yeah, great job." And he started putting over me and my television background, just like yelling it in my face. And it's like, okay, great. This is a great way to start my time here and a great way to start the show.
It's been reported that Sandra, lead seamstress at AEW, said one of her favorite things that she's ever made since coming to AEW is your robe.
Awesome.
So did you come to Sandra with a design for that, or did she just say, here's a robe I made for you? Like, how does the creative process for putting your character into your gear work?
I'm bad at design. I've just realized over the years I'm just bad at designing gear. So I lean on the minimal. And I feel I can make stuff that's nice and minimal. When I switched over to the robes years ago, same thing. It was kind of a brainstorm with somebody. And it was kind of like, here's a guideline. Good luck. and then usually they knock it out. But Sandra was a similar thing. I kind of told her the energy I was going for. And then she brought back pretty much that jacket. And like I said, I have this design that I commissioned, which was the librarian shush thing that was on the back. I have it framed in my house now. That's the only thing I had. I was like, look, I'm going to have this. I'm going to give you this. And then that was it. And then she brought me back the robe that kind of looks like a smoker's jacket with the librarian thing on the back. And it's AEW colors. And it's like, Sandra, look at this beautiful piece. Like, I can't. She's just a pro, man. She's just a pro. Yeah. I kind of just gave her an energy to vibe with. And then she just knocked it out. I go to her for my stuff now. I usually could just trust her. Like, it's very rare that you could just kind of give people an energy. You have to draw the damn image for people. Like, I need this. Like, I don't have to do that with Sandra. It's like, here's a vibe. It's all you.
We are talking to Peter Avalon. Peter, talk about the transition between or from the librarian to pretty Peter Avalon. I know Cody had a hand in that.
He absolutely had a hand in the direction that we went to with it at AEW. Pretty Peter is just me. That's just the way I live my life. I've been Pretty Peter for all... I'm in my 13th year of wrestling now. That's been pretty much what I've done. For a little bit, I switched over to a gimmick called Professional Peter. Yeah. And then when I was running the Arizona television show, I was Producer Peter. So I kind of keep it a theme, but I've always been Pretty. But Cody for sure had a hand in the energy change that we went to with like the whole model walk-off and loving not only myself, but loving just beauty and everyone and kind of leaning in more so in that direction and stuff like that. And I appreciate Cody really diving in and helping me find a direction to kind of go with it instead of just being a generic pretty boy.
We're talking to Peter Avalon on AEW Unrestricted. Coming up, we're going to talk about one of my favorite feuds in AEW, Peter and Brandon Cutler, and a little bit about his time on the indies.
This is AEW Unrestricted. Tony Schiavone, Aubrey Everetts, and Pretty Peter Avalon all with you here. Thank you very much for joining us. We'll tell you how you can join us on a regular basis coming up a little bit later. But We took the break and we want to talk about the feud you had with Brandon Cutler. You know Brandon obviously quite well. It was a feud over losses. It was on AEW Dark, wrestled to a double count out and wrestled to a double DQ. And then, of course, someone zero has got to go. Ugh. Talk about that whole thing.
I hate Brandon. I really, really, honestly, truthfully, legitimately despise Brandon Cutler.
Yeah.
It's very thankful for the Bucks to pair Brandon and I together. It was definitely a pandemic angle for sure.
Right.
I think it started, we kind of messed with each other on BTE. I think before then when we were touring, I remember we posting some of the bits and going back, I was like, oh, I forgot about a lot of these bits where we were messing with each other at the venues. But then when the pandemic started and we had that, we did a couple matches at, I think it was Nick's house or the compound where I drove to Brandon's house and told him you suck. And I just kept going. It was just fun. It was nice for the Bucks to kind of give Brandon and I something to do besides whatever our duties were already at Dynamite. So it was like just kind of creative. And then when the fans started really buying into it and getting into it, it was like, this is fun, man. It was all organic. It was all online. It's all silly. It was all a lot of fun. And I had a blast with Brandon, man. Brandon was great to brainstorm with, to talk shit with, and to get ideas going with. And he's a good sport. We were being dicks to each other. I remember like stuff that we didn't get filmed. Like it's like, no, man, go ahead, rip on me. And it's like giving him examples, and I'm like, oh, I made myself feel bad. What did I do? You know.
That reminds me of our like prior to the walk off. You were like, hey, I have something I'm going to say about you that's like really mean. I'm like, oh, let me know. What do you want to say? And you're like, yeah. I don't know. And I think you said like, I belong in a horse race or judging a horse race.
Something along the lines.
And yeah. It popped me so hard. And I'm like, yes, you have to say that. You're like, but I feel like a terrible person. Like, you are, which is why it's great. Do it. Oh, my God.
I got to just embrace it.
Yeah, exactly.
Might as well embrace it. If I'm going to be scum, I'm just going to be scum. So that's.
And I love when you have like something that's as silly, but then you have those moments of seriousness. Like, Tony had this press conference between you and Brandon, like there must be a winner style press conference on BTE that was like the most serious moment of this feud. And then Leva comes out as like the damsel that can't choose. And it suddenly is like this really deep story with all of these nuances.
A lot of nuances, a lot of levels to the storytelling. Yeah.
So how did you feel about Brandon eventually getting the win?
Whatever. Say lovey. I'm more upset at being spiked on D4s and D8s and D12s and you name it. Now, playing Dungeons & Dragons is a whole different story. That's been fun, but I never want to be slammed on the dice ever again.
Before we even go back even any further, I'm telling you, I got a lot of memories of our shows. You think back and you think about the pandemic. I know we had the big video recently that showed all the memories, but one of my favorite memories is you holding on to the head of Cesar. Okay, and crying uncontrollably. That was so spontaneous to me and so freaking funny. I couldn't get over it. I mean, I just wanted to see it over. Things are going on and you're still there crying like, oh, man.
I miss him. Poor Cesar, he was hurt. It was devastating to my heart. Like, it still aches. I still weep. I dream about it and I wake up in night sweats.
I love that it was this deep emotion and is now a shirt available on shopaw.com because it was such a traumatic experience. You might as well.
Yes. I'm glad that my misery can be enjoyed by all of you. I'm glad.
What was it? Was that spontaneous or did you guys plan that? Okay, you don't need to tell us.
A combination of both.
Tremendous.
You always kind of have a direction and then just feel it out in the moment.
Yeah, which I like. It's fun to kind of have a direction to go and then feel it out and then here's what you get.
Kind of want to go back, talk a little bit about wrestling training and how you got into wrestling and whatnot. So you trained at the Charles Mercury School, Venus Fighting Essence, broke your arm in the first 6 months. So how did you end up doing that? How do you break your arm in the first 6 months of wrestling?
Man, I went going to this wrestling school. I was going two times a week, sometimes three times a week with a friend of mine. We were going as often as we could and we were doing great, man. We were killing it. But Charles Mercury was one of the trainers. Scorpio Sky was one of the trainers. And then a couple other guys that aren't wrestling anymore. We were knocking it out, man. And it was, we had a smaller class. So we were able to get a lot more stuff in. And then I had a practice match that I just tried to do something I shouldn't do. I did a frog splash. The ring we were training in was not a nice ring. It was like a rinky-dink, junky ring. The padding in the middle wasn't very good. It was like I bumped, trying to take care of this guy, never did a frog splash, and I bumped really bad on a frog splash, and I broke my the radius in my right arm, and I had to have surgery to put a plate in, another surgery to take the plate out, and now I have the metal plate on my keychain that I carry with me every day to remind me to maybe not do frog splashes when I'm untrained on how to do them.
Only do moves that you've practiced.
Yeah. And it's a nice reminder that I'm not as indestructible as I thought going in there, you know.
What got you interested in wrestling in the first place, Peter?
Watching it on TV and talking with it at school with friends. It's the same story as a lot of people, and then you just kind of stick with it. It kind of wavered it would be on TV like anything, like Power Rangers, anything. It was movements. But then like certain characters really caught my eye, and that's what kind of kept me watching it. It was like, I love Kurt Angle more than anything. Like, he is my favorite wrestler of all time. Like, guys like him and the guys around that time were who I got really hooked watching. I told Christian, he was one of those guys. I was like, man, you and the Brood is like the coolest shit in the world. And like Kurt Angle and all these dudes, like certain energies kept me hooked.
So you made your debut in 2010, Championship Wrestling from Hollywood, where you worked with Colt Cabana, Scorpio Sky, a bunch of the LA guys. Talk a little bit about the SoCal wrestling scene, both then and sort of what it's become.
I debuted at the very end of 2008. The Hollywood show debuted in 2010, and I was the very, very first match of the program. So the show starts, and then out comes my goofy ass, and then I get beat up by Colt Cabana. That was it. That was my very first match on television, was getting my ass whooped by Colt Cabana. And I just remember him having the heaviest hands, because he chopped me a couple times. The first time, it was like the double gorilla whack chop. And I just remember my soul leaving my body. And then I was like, I have to take another one.
All right, let's fast forward here to your time at Impact, starting in 2013. We mentioned Norv Furnum.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, how'd that name come about?
I'm not sure. I don't know whose exactly it came from. It was Taz or Jeff Jarrett or someone. I don't know where the name exactly came from. I just remember they were really excited to tell me that I had this name, because it was all funny to them.
Right. Furnum's a funny term in wrestling.
Yep, sure is.
It's an inside term. And I still don't know what it means.
Furnum, that one I knew was the wrestling term. And Norv, I think I realized, is because at the time I had a haircut like Shaggy from Scooby-Doo.
Yeah.
And Norville is his name.
Okay.
So I think that's where it came from.
You know Shaggy's real name.
Norville. Yeah.
Something new every day. You learn it. I want to talk about you and P.P. Ray.
Oh, boy.
So I remember, just for context, like Peter and Ray Rosas are this stripper tag team. And I heard them making the rounds, Southern California indie scene. Great. I go to bar wrestling the night before Bola. I think it was 2019. And you guys are closing down the show, the main event, like last show for you guys before AEW starts. Mm-hmm. This music starts, like Obsession, and you guys just come out gyrating and dancing, and there are people just stuffing dollars at you, like just constantly. And I was like, these guys make more money in their entrance than most dudes do in merch.
We didn't want to start the match. We didn't ever want to have the match. We didn't. We're like, let's just do this. And sometimes the dances would just go forever. And then when you like take the glance back at the guys waiting to wrestle, and they're just like standing there on the apron making no money. Just like, look, can we do this?
So how does a stripper gimmick start?
It was very organic. Bar wrestling turned us into strippers. We were already kind of just like a dancing duo, goofs. People liked us. And then somebody, one of the shows, stuffed a dollar down Ray's shorts. And then people started following suit. And then we're like, hey, are we strippers now? And then it just like blew up. We now that the whole thing is that we were just strippers. And then any other show that we went to, we were getting dollars put in our shorts, and we were just like amateur strippers now. Lucha Vavoom embraced our gimmick, and they kind of made it their own, and they put masks on us, and we became the Sexy Mexies, which we were just, yeah, sexy Mexican cowboys that came out. We had our little guns. We'd rip off our the leggings, and they were like cowhide leggings. So we were just movie-style cowboys and sexy.
Wow.
It was wild, man. The Lucha Vavoom, they ran at the Mayan Theater in downtown LA, big Hollywood show. So it was like we had like Drew Carey doing commentary, the voice of SpongeBob SquarePants doing commentary. We had wild burlesque dances happening in between the matches. It was a wild thing. And then we're getting beers and everything bought for us after the show. People want to take pictures with us, and you got to keep the mask on because of the mystique of the lucha, you know?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Who are these sexy dancing boys?
I love Sexy Mixies. Oh my God.
That's such a great name. All right. So you trained David Arquette for his big wrestling comeback.
Yes, I sure did.
Talk about that, how you first met him and how you started training with him.
I've been working with the United Wrestling Network for now my entire career, pretty much. And for a while, I was running their wrestle center, their training school. I got a phone call from David Arquette. Somebody had given him my number, and he gave me a call, and then he was interested in training. He actually left me a voicemail, and I thought it was a rib at first. It was just so casual. Hey, this is David Arquette. I was like, oh, okay, this is silly. I called him, and then we set something up, and he would drive out to my school in Oxnard, which is about hour and a half away from Hollywood. So he was making the drive to train a couple times, and then he was like, I'm committed to doing this for his documentary and everything that came out. So he bought a ring, put it in his backyard, and I was training him at his house for a while. I'd go there once, twice, three times a week, depending on when he wanted to train. We got him healthy, we got him into shape, and I think I trained him solid. I also was able to Championship Wrestling from Hollywood's one of their biggest shows. We ran at the Irvine Improv, and the headlining match was me versus him, which was really, really cool. Sold out show. It was dope.
Did you ever advise him not to get in the ring with Nick Gage?
So funny story. I'm a little bummed. I'm a little bummed that I didn't get asked about it. Like, it just has a little quip about anything.
Right.
He asked me to train that week before it. I couldn't do it. And I don't know why. I couldn't make my schedule work with his schedule. And when he messaged me about it, he's like, hey, I have a match coming up and I want to train for it. I said, yeah, no problem. He told me it was a hardcore match. And I thought, okay, what's a couple chairs and cookie sheets and maybe a table? I didn't realize it was this fucking death match with Nick Gage to get your throat sliced, because I probably would have been like, skirt, let's talk.
Yeah, MDK all day is like nothing to fuck around with, dude.
For real. Maybe I could have gone and had your back too, bro. You're fucking shit, man. Mud show.
Yeah, man. What a frightful thing that was, man.
It was terrifying. And he still, and then training him again out anything after that, he's got this little scar now. It's like, brother.
Yeah.
See, you learn a lesson one time. Don't get in the ring with Nick Gage unless you're absolutely ready to.
Yeah. Not around glass and barbed wire.
Oh no. Yeah, I worked a match with him at WrestleMania weekend, and it was just like, oh my God. Like, I don't think anyone can be ready for that. So I don't blame Arquette at all.
No, can we have I challenge Nick to a handshaking contest. Like, let's like, I challenge him to a makeover contest. Let's see who can do their hair the best. Let's like,
that's a safe way to do it. Anyway.
Yeah.
You had mentioned a couple times you've got a television background. 2016, you joined Championship Wrestling from Arizona as the executive producer. So how did being an executive producer for television help you with your in-ring performance?
Since being a part of the United Wrestling Network and then working with the Hollywood show and everything, just trying to stay involved, you just kind of start figuring out other stuff. And with the opportunity to kind of work with the Arizona show, it was fun. We went from the national product with the Hollywood show to a regional product. Like, this show only airs in Phoenix, Tucson, and Yuma, Arizona. So legitimately just the state of Arizona were on television. And then you can watch it on the internet. We're still on the air. Technically, we just air the Hollywood show version of it now. But when we were making the original show, was on for about 3 years. We were 1 year, the first year we were in Tucson, I wasn't in charge. We were making a move to Phoenix, and the show was going under like a management switch and all this. That it was almost going to be eliminated. So me and my partner, Mick Greenwood, took over the show in charge. He has a background in music and running shows and then obviously my wrestling background. So our pairing as a team, it really, really worked for the show. Like, we were able to take the show. The last show we had legitimately 8 people in the crowd Okay. We got duped by a promoter that was helping us out there. And we had somebody that was supposed to be advertised for the show that obviously didn't show up. Thousands of dollars stolen. It was a mess. And then after that, we were able to, we found a home at the Nile Theater, and we were able to slowly build our audience into selling out the theater with our big shows. And we had guys like MJF on the show, Tim Storm on the show. I challenged Nick Aldis to a match for the NWA title, which obviously didn't go in my favor. So we've had a lot of people pass through, and it's been a great show, and we were able to take it and make it something. In just the 2 years of its existence in Phoenix, we made it the number one show in Arizona. Everybody wanted to work with us. It was wonderful. It was a great experience, and I loved creating the stories on it. Like, we have some absurd stuff that we got away with. Like, I created an attorney character named Celino Barnes, and he has his pair of legals, which are his paralegal tag team, and I competed in a gavel on a pole match where I had to pull a gavel off the thing, hit it on its base. And then I lost the match, which means I lost control of my television show. We did a lot of this wacky stuff in just 2 years, and it was fabulous. It was a lot of fun, and it got eyes on it. It got eyes on it in Arizona, especially. They really learned to embrace us in the state.
You mentioned on the Chris Jericho podcast, I believe, that you had learned from Roddy Piper. Talk about that.
That was a one-off thing, random luck. I don't remember what exactly. I think Piper was going to do a show or something. He had some kind of involvement, and his son was also involved with us. So he did a one-off thing with the Championship Wrestling from Hollywood show.
Okay.
And he was in town. He was picked up by another wrestler, Jericho 120. And he calls me up and he says, "Hey man, you want to come roll around? Roddy's looking for a ring and just wants to get in there, whatever." So I drive down. I lived in Rancho Cucamonga at the time. I drove down to Sherman Oaks in traffic. It was like an hour and a half to get there. And it's just the three of us. And Roddy Piper's given like a seminar to me and this guy, Evan, Jericho 20. The stuff Roddy was saying pretty much just reinvented the way I thought and saw wrestling, because it was all based on just energy and presence and your eyes and working the room in just a certain way. And like, we did not get very physical in there. If anything, we circled a little bit and maybe locked up, and that's about it. And it was just all how he worked the room and how he was able to channel energy and control energy. And it was like, damn, dude, the examples he was using is like, You can work an entire room, like, you know, with your eyes and this. And then he's working the room, empty room, the exact way he would work like the Madison Square Garden or something like that. So to get all these people to really to lean forward and sink in and buy into what he's selling, you know.
Yeah.
I think I said it on Jericho's podcast as well. I have one thing I wish I did. We were in the zone, and we were circling, and we got each other's face. He was like, "Just kind of feel it, just kind of feel it. Feel it out, feel it out." And I could feel his energy. I could feel it. I was like, I know what he's talking about. And we started slowly circling, slowly getting closer, looking at each other in the eyes, like, we're in it. And then he slaps the shit out of me. And it pulled me out of it. I just remember like, whack, oh boy. Like, I didn't know how to react. Looking back now, I wish I just slapped the shit out of him back. But I would, because I know he probably would have loved it. He would have been like, "Yes." In the moment, I was like so blown back. Like, what just happened? I just got slapped by Piper. I was like, "Oh, shit." And then he was like, "Are you okay?" And I was like, "Shit." I pulled him out of the moment. So that's my one thing I wish I did, is that I wish I just slapped the shit out of him back when we were face to face.
Only phrases you can say in wrestling.
Yeah, right? But from that day, man, I just thought about my work differently.
We're talking to Peter Avalon on AEW Unrestricted. Coming up, lots of fun questions from fans.
You are with us on AEW Unrestricted, Tony Aubrey and Peter Avalon, who we've told some great stories about, and really have reveled in some of the great entertaining moments that you've brought us, not only online, but on our shows. The fans are really into your mustache.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, Tony on Twitter. This is at Tony on Twitter. It's not Tony Schiavone. It's at Tony on Twitter. What's the key to having such an amazing mustache?
Patience. Because, boy, I had to turn into my, like, I had to get closer to my 30s for this to ever come in the right way.
Yeah, I was always told you got to stick with it.
Yeah. I tried the mustache one time in my early 20s as a gag. It always starts as a gag. And it was so just pencil thin. I was like, I can't walk around with this.
Or you can. It's commitment.
Oh, and then I'm just John Waters with the
coming around with the little pencil thin mustache. I mean, some people make it work. Some people make it work. At In Case You Missed It on Twitter, I'm dinging the wig man. I also love the makeover idea. Shout out to beautiful people. You could do hair cutting, hairspray, beard trims, and even cologne. Give J.D. Drake a plant sprayer. Any thoughts on ramping the gimmick up to be even more outrageous?
Just stay tuned. People give us ideas like we're not already in, like, thinking the same way. Like, come on. Come on.
Stay tuned is great because J.D. Drake.
Yeah. What a man.
What a man.
What a man.
Sandwich lover. Sandwich lover on Twitter. Got to think about this one, Peter.
All right.
What kind of sandwich best represents the wingman?
Maybe like a nice Italian, because it's a bunch of meats put together and it's delicious.
So much meat.
Mm, a lot of meat.
A lot of meat.
Yikes. Go to the next one quickly. Okay.
Yeah, seriously. I was like, a Reuben? No, Italian. That one's good. Kari Shaw on Twitter. How many Ric Flair CarShield commercials have you starred in? I've only seen two so far.
I think maybe there's three of them. The one that always airs is the one that I'm getting chopped. There's one of me, I'm in the background wooing, and then there's scenes where I'm getting beat up by Ray Rosas and then also beating up Ray Rosas. I clothesline him at one point and then he jumps on me at another. But I know the one that always airs is him chopping me.
Here's a pretty cool question, and it's from Andy on Twitter. He's put some thought in this. This is pretty cool. It's something that we had talked about earlier. With John Moxley and JB now using licensed theme music, did you ever hit up TK to license Obsession for you?
Ooh, man. If my man Ray Rosas is next to me, it would just start to play out of our ears, I think. So I think he would have to license it, you know what I mean? Because it just comes out.
Well, it's the old Saturday Night Main Event theme, right?
It's the P.P. Ray entrance music, Tony.
Sorry. Yeah, that's where they got that from. Gotcha.
Yeah. Could you imagine Hulk Hogan and then shaking their ass like me and Ray Rosas? No way. Horrendous. No.
Nah, doesn't work. At Clarence Alexander Prion on Twitter, I so love you being pretty Peter Avalon. Would you wear Speedos like me to be ready for a comeback summer this year?
Oh, I already do.
There you go. Boom.
Way ahead of you, man. I hang out with a Brazilian guy. We have to wear Speedos.
100%. It's a requirement.
Yeah.
Fire Pro Kirtland. That's Fire Pro Kirtland on Twitter. Who was your favorite tag team when you were growing up watching wrestling?
Edge and Christian. That's not a kiss-ass response. I swear it was Edge and Christian. I swear it was.
Absolutely.
I loved whatever they were with, the Hardy Boys and the Dudley Boys. And
great stuff.
They were funny. They were just funny, man.
Mustard Vengeance on Twitter. Man, these names are always so great.
Yeah.
Mustard Vengeance on Twitter asks,
they are good.
Have you pushed to have footage of you holding Cesar crying in your Dynamite intro? Because it should absolutely be there. Now there's a demand.
That should be just the entire theme to Dynamite. It's just him, me holding him as Dynamite.
Father Trevino on Twitter. Maybe it's Father Trevino on Twitter. Do you miss being a librarian?
At times when it gets loud in the back and I get overwhelmed in my head, it was nice to be able to, you know, retire to the library and find some peace and quiet. I don't have that right now.
Got a question from Zach Mann on Twitter, one that I'm also interested in. So bumping on tax is terrible. I think bumping on Legos is also terrible. But there's big question. How gnarly was that dice bump that you did in the Brandon Cullen match?
Awful. Have you seen those D4s? They're pyramids. They're points.
Massive.
Yeah. What are they called? Caltrops or something? There's like, they pop your tires. They're weapons. You know? Yeah. It's awful. It's terrible.
This is a bizarre one, so hang with us. This is from Nazi Puncher Extraordinaire on Twitter.
Oh, boy.
Peter, you have one of the most punchable faces in wrestling. Now, I mean that in the highest compliment. What inspired your look?
Well, I guess what inspired my looks was genetics, my DNA. Yes.
Right.
When my mother and my father came together, June 14, 1989, so 9 months prior to that when they came together. Well, this was kind
you
of
know the specific date?
No, I don't want to know the specific date either. But yeah, so I appreciate the compliment, but I think that's more a compliment for my mom and dad. So good job, Pedro and Patty.
Oh boy. Buy the book 81 on Twitter. Any chance of seeing Ray Rosas with the Wingman? I know he had a couple dark matches way back when, but I think pairing you guys, how badly do you want your tag team partner back?
The world, I don't know if they're ready, because the minute Pee Pee Ray hits your eyeballs, it's your favorite thing in the world.
It's intense. I can say from experience, it's a lot to take in, especially when you're not ready for it.
We have changed lives. We really have.
Froby1 on Twitter, and this goes back to what we were talking about earlier about you being an executive producer of Championship Wrestling from Arizona. Do you get to do much production in AEW, given your experience with Championship Wrestling?
AEW, no. It's fun to be able to like brainstorm when we get to brainstorm ideas. Like if we present an idea of like, hey, we have a promo. Sometimes it's kind of bare bones. Like promo, here's the gist. So then we can kind of brainstorm with production and create something. So like in that sense, I've been able to play, and that's been fun. So I get to speak up and interject and be a part of that creation. So that's cool. But in the full encompassing, like, here's my idea. No. For BTE, yes.
Yeah, I think BTE, everybody sort of has a hand in their own their own bits and whatnot.
It's good stuff, man.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's been fun, and it gives people a challenge on how to on a goal they want to accomplish. Like, how can I shoot something? Like right now, we just shot something in the can that it took a lot of time to finagle, a camera angle and little swoops and edits. And it's like, it just kind of gets your brain working, you know?
All right, Peter, you're a good man. Enjoy all your stuff. We really do, man.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Thank you so much.
All right. You can follow him on Instagram at PPA All Day. That's PPA All Day. And on Twitter at P Avalon.
That's it.
You can listen to AEW Unrestricted Podcast for free wherever you get your podcasts on your favorite apps. And then watch us on YouTube on Monday mornings if you prefer to consume podcasts with your eyeballs, because definitely. I mean, Peter's one of those guys. You just got to look at him, man.
Mm-hmm. The enchanting aura behind me.
Yes.
By the way, you can search AEW Unrestricted on YouTube, and that's where you can pull up the podcast if you haven't subscribed already. And don't forget Elevation Monday nights, Darks on Tuesday nights, all on our YouTube channel. And then we've got some big shows coming up during the week.
Yeah, we got Dynamite every Wednesday night, 8 o'clock, 7 central on TNT. We're back on Wednesdays, finally. Oh, my God, everything feels right. And pretty soon, coming up in August, we've got Rampage coming on Fridays.
Ooh. It'll be Friday night at 10 o'clock Eastern, by the way.
Yeah.
All right, Peter, thanks a lot again. My name is Tony Schiavone, and she is...
Aubrey Edwards. What's up?
Thanks for listening to Unrestricted.
See ya.
Bye.
Come on, throw your hands up, let me see you. Restricted.